Greetings, everyone. Thank you for tuning in to Beyond the Matrix, the radio program that unquestionably challenges you to think outside the box of convention and to explore with me and my great guests the many other possibilities available in the free thought zone. That's where we will journey to today during the program. Everything is available to us. No holding back. We are not mainstream. We are the alternative truth. And thank you for being part of that truth. So stay tuned. Here we go. Get ready for another hour of out there information. Greetings, everybody. This is Patricia Corey talking to you from the Azores Islands in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean. It's 4 a.m. here on a Sunday morn, so I'm used to getting up at this hour. It's not too difficult, but it is challenging, let's say. And before I bring on my guests, I would like to also mention, since I know that many of you have been listening to the show that preceded James Gilliland and his amazing East Seti Ranch, and here, too, I've got some very exciting activity up out there. I've called in craft before here, and tonight is no different. And, you know, it's just, if you've got yourself up at 4 in the morning instead of snugging your bug in a rug, you can see quite a lot going on in the sky. So it's nice to know that we've got the stellar connection, because we'll be talking about the galactic whales and dolphins, as we will speaking about our cetacean family on this great planet, something that is so important to me and my experience passing through this life and having found that mission to serve, to bring their wisdom, their beauty, and their song as much as possible into the consciousness of people with whom I'm in contact. So here we go. I was fortunate to, I don't even remember how we encountered each other, to run into Douglas Webster. He's known as Douglas Dolphinus, and I've been calling him Delphinius. So he's been very patient with me, not correcting my description of his name. Douglas has a master's degree in fine art, and for over 20 years was the director of a major contemporary fine art gallery, curator, and art writer in Scottsdale, Arizona, and Santa Fe, New Mexico. And in 1997, he moved to Kona, Hawaii, which is, boy, talk about the right place to be in touch with the whales and dolphins. He's been there doing amazing work. We have so much in common. It's uncanny, but then again, it shouldn't be, because the whales and dolphins are speaking to so many of us here on this planet in service. He is also conducting research on interspecies communication with the cetaceans. He has been bringing people out to swim with the dolphins, to be with the whales. That's what I'm doing here. I've got a group coming in just a few days as well. So without any further ado, I will let him, Douglas, tell us much more about the work. Can you call this work, swimming with whales and dolphins?
No work. It's all play.
Hiya, Douglas. Thanks for being
here. Aloha, Patricia. Thank you so much for having me on board your ship into the stars.
That's a great way to put it. You know, I've just got to tell you a little beautiful link is the woman who came to me and said, let me help you found your organization for the whales and dolphins. Her name is Nikki, and she swam out with you some years ago as well. So that's a beautiful link.
I like how things, it's a smaller world than we can possibly imagine.
Indeed it is. And it's getting smaller by the minute. So thank you so much for being with us. And thanks to all of you who are tuned in for the first time to my show, which is only recently started up at 9 p.m. And hopefully we're going to take you on a beautiful ride through the waves and help tune you in, if you're not already, to the song. That is my predominant interest now in my years of being with the whales and dolphins, is helping people understand that they are the musicians of the ocean, There is a definitive reason why that music exists. It's not mating, only mating. It's not only distress, the calls, the incredible harmonies that are going on in the oceans are, in my humble opinion, holding the planet together. And hopefully Douglas and I can elaborate on that some more.
Yeah, I think that's a very good observation. And many of the people who've been with the dolphins and whales in different events report that the sound space is the most critical aspect of the experience. And of course, we know water itself is a transmuting device. It actually accelerates sound up to 8 to 10 times. The cetaceans themselves are sound animals, having evolved over millions of years, apparatus, wetware, if you will, to detect the most subtle and sublime of the sound frequencies that are being amplified in the water. And of course, their messages to one another have been recorded, being able to travel in deep trenches up to 4,000 miles in some cases of the deep blue whale signals. So we know that they have a network of sound channels that have connected the planet in their own internet for millions and millions of years. I think they're starting to share some of that information with us.
Yeah, that's what's so exciting. That when I talk to other people that are working as we are, that information has somehow been translated to us and it comes out as part of the most dominant information that I feel I'm receiving and I'm sharing with other people is the importance of that music, the importance, the beauty of it, of course. If you've been once in the ocean with the dolphins or like you, you've had the joy of actually swimming with whales. That has not happened for me yet, but the music does, in fact, touch you immensely. It's life-changing.
Mm, indeed. The song lines of the cetaceans do indeed, I think, kind of weave a web of light and sound that comprise the reality of the cetaceans. Like the ancient Aboriginal tribes of Australia who believe that such things as song lines are what holds the world together, so too a lot of people believe that when you watch the humpbacks, for example, with their heads pointed down to the bottom of the ocean and sounding a magnificent symphony. Interestingly, this song changes only by a verse every year. So every year a new verse is added. So we know that there is a whole dystogamy going on, that the whales are actually singing into existence some kind of symphony of sound and reality, I believe.
And it just amazes me that we are so similar in our approach. I mean, that's my last book before we leave you was about the symphony that is produced by the whales and dolphins, also referred to as their opus for the planet Earth. Mm-hmm. And in fact, I was just speaking to Douglas before we started the show about how he had put on an event called Sing for the Whales back in 2001. Mm-hmm. And I'm putting on an event next, many of you know this already, in London in April of 2014, entitled Singing the Oceans Alive. And the concept is waking up the planet to the fact, to the importance of this song, and singing back, letting them know that we get it.
Well, I think it's important, too, to recognize that using song is a way to access our emotional centers, our heart bodies, if you will. And this is where the real energy is coming from that will propel Earth consciousness, Earth human consciousness to the next frequency, which is what's happening. The cetaceans are helping us and assisting us in this process.
Well, one of the things that we can look at the planet, I certainly talk about it a lot, is how even the music industry has transmuted music to this very guttural, very basic music, the music of today, if we can call it music. The modern music is very unharmonious in many ways, and it's disruptive. Whereas you listen to a piece of classical music, you get the sacred geometry right through the music.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. I think we are seeing different, you might say, frequency bands of sound that are disharmonious, but in a way, because they're setting up an interference pattern, something else, another effect is taking place. Now, one might say that interference pattern is having a negative effect. I tend to think in terms of an overall, that both igniting, the dark and the light of that radiation, which is the radiation of the new frequencies of sound. We're trying to digest this, and I think the younger kids, the younger children, on one hand, they're coming in so bright, they're coming in so open, and on the other hand, they have to ground themselves with this thorough, deep beat kind of music that keeps them centered from the loins on up.
Well, that's a beautiful way to think about that. I never really played that out in my mind, but that makes a lot of sense. Let's hope that that's what's happening, because
it's all rock and roll, baby. You know, so when we're growing up, what was it? You know, it's sending some signals that's coming from the bottom part of our chakras and boiling up, starting that kundalini rising. We didn't know what to call it then, but I think all of us, at least from the boomer generation that I come
that's
from,
mine too.
So yeah, I mean, there was some amazing things coming through the music of our generation, and I couldn't discount anything coming through the music now, except that it's different. Just like my parents thought the music I was listening to was ridiculous.
But
and
me,
some
even,
extent
even,
it sure was.
I don't want to go there because I'll get all, you know, involved with this.
Well, let's get back to the sound, the beautiful situation.
Able to say, my parents were devotees of opera because I come from an Italian background. But even they were able to say, wow, these Beatles, this is good music.
Yeah. Well, they were able to touch something universal, no question about it. The cetaceans are resonating something universal, but it's at a frequency that our ears haven't even grown accustomed to yet. And this is the interesting thing to me, that I see people going through, let's say, an expansion of their awareness. And the way they get there is they're actually going into an altered state when they go into the water. That comes as part of the exercise of leaving the land and going into zero gravity. And when you're in that state, that slightly altered state, then you start to be open for other kinds of information to come into your body through your senses. And the sound vibrations that come in from the water themselves, the water itself has memory, it has structure. We know this now. We know from Emoto's work that water has extremely exquisite properties that transmutes information. And we don't quite know how to frame it in scientific language because it's way beyond our comprehension.
Yes, I was going to bring up Emoto, so I'm glad you did. For anyone who's listening who is not familiar with Emoto, we're talking about Masaru Emoto and his work, Messages from Water, where he takes samples of water and freezes them fast. He has some kind of process that we haven't understood yet from a layman's point of view, but he freezes these crystals and then interacts with them as they thaw and watches them change form depending on what message is being sent into the water.
Right,
so
exactly.
if you haven't heard or you haven't seen the information, be sure after the show to look up Masaru Emoto, E-M-O-T-O, because he has brought through some really important information for us all and teaching us about how water is such an incredible retainer of memory, and therefore, of course, how sound works on your body when you're talking about your own body is 78% water, just like the earth. So, get this.
There's a fractal patterning going on, and some people who understand or even think about fractal patterning, everything is the same, self-same across scale. That is to say, even at the microbiological level, the cells look very much, the brain chemistry looks very much like the galaxy. We've shown pictures of what is now the neuronic patterns of brain tissue that is held next to the galaxy, or the new images of the so-called dark matter. They're the same thing. They're the same kind of connectivity of these energy frequencies. So we're starting to understand that, and this is our gateway to expanding out from the limited framework of our societies, our nation, national, patriotic, our little mentalities of race or creed, and then expanding out. Now we're getting to almost the point of thinking of ourselves as a planetary consciousness. This is where the whales and the dolphins come in to say, yes, hello, welcome back. We are a planet.
Indeed.
This is a spaceship going through, you know, and we need to work together in order to open up to a further galactic consciousness.
Those beautiful images are such powerful reminders of the connectivity that they help us get out of separation and understand our the quantum physics and all of the beauty of understanding the oneness of all things. And we use the language, but certainly we're being able to, with so much of the information that's coming out now, we're able to really witness it. Like you said, those brain cells and pictures of the universe or galaxies are just impeccable. In fact, some people from there go to the place of, are we really living in a quantum, in a virtual reality? But for me, it's just all one beautiful, connected, incredible, conscious existence.
Hee-haw.
a whole great spirit to that.
Well, there's an interesting drama that's going on in the human manifold right now, and we're witnessing it. We've both chosen to sort of step over to the side, if you will, or look at it from the edge of the unfoldment, as one way it's been described. Both in our island worlds, we're kind of at the extreme edges, and I think it gives us a different perspective than people who are more in the trenches, let's say, living in city dwelling situations, 40-hour weeks, and trying to survive that. Hopefully we can provide some rays of light and let you know that, yes, life does go on and there is paradise beyond the darkened city streets.
Oh, get thee to the ocean.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Even if you have to pour some Epsom salts in the bathtub and soak yourself for a while, definitely get yourself in some water. And salt water is even better for the body, for the etheric field. It neutralizes all kinds of energy frequencies. There is an experience, and you've had it when you've gone into the water there, I'm sure, that you're able to let go of so much of the things that bring stress to our lives, just being on land, and somehow stuck in the idea that we're in a solid state of being, when in fact, when you really think about it, we're more liquid, we're more water, we are water beings on a water planet. So it's time to start really accessing that part of ourselves, who we really are, which are water beings living in a liquid consciousness.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what, when the first time you jump into the ocean, and my experience had a lot to do with shark fear, because coming from California, we had those big whites out there, and lots of people in my growing up, lots of horrible stories and things occurred. So I grew up with that fear of the deep ocean. And so it was like, okay, my message in all of my work is get over your fear, face your fear, get over it, and start living in the power zone. So a few years ago, someone said, I had been going out to the whales on boats for I can't count how many years, but in one of my conferences, somebody said, well, what is your fear, Patricia? And I said, sharks! Just came out from that inner place. Mm-hmm. And I decided, well, okay, it's time to jump off a boat then, because I'm never going to be able to swim with the dolphins without it. And it's my calling. So I'll tell you what, when you jump off of a boat, and you jump into the wild ocean, you are in complete surrender.
Yes, yes. And you're trusting that the universe is going to play fair.
You know, like I remember the first time I went swimming wild dolphins, and the captain said, okay, Patricia, now I had a pod of 150 or more bottlenose right out there.
That's huge.
Fins. All I could see was fins. And he said, Patricia, this is unbelievable. This is a huge pod. Jump. I was like, gulp. He said, they're dolphins. I said, how do you know that?
All I see is fins, yeah. So you're not a good swimmer, I take it. It's a little bit more of a fear going through the curtain of fear there.
Well, sure. When you've got that feel, that's one of the reasons why I was out there, was to put that feel. Sleep, and here's this na 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 na, these fins everywhere. And I jumped in for the first time into this huge pod of bottlenose, and they were relaxed. They were not moving. They were just hanging out. And
so
I
cool.
did with the most extraordinary experience. And I have had many extraordinary experiences in this life because I travel the world. I'm all over the place, sacred sites, Tibet, whatever. But mm-hmm. the most, hands down, extraordinary experience was the first time I leaped in, it just leap of faith mm-hmm. and found myself in a pod of very relaxed 150 or 200 big bottlenose dolphins.
Fabulous. It's like a shamanic initiation, really. You're just jumping into another atmosphere, another entire stratosphere, if you will, altering your state of being and consciousness instantly as you enter into the water. And then here you are surrounded by however many other consciousness beings that are all beaming at you with these very sharp instruments, wetware instruments that can read you right through you like a transparent bag of skin. And what is that doing? It's totally vibrating every molecule in your body. It's changing the spin radiuses. It's changing the vibrational spin frequencies. And so, no wonder people would say, gee, I never felt like, or I haven't felt like this since I was 7 years old. And there's a reason for that, because they definitely go in and do a tuning on all
they
the chakra
do.
Points. They definitely
do. And that one time I was with, not with any group. I was there as a researcher, so I was alone. I had somebody in the water with me helping me, but it was just me and this pod. And the first thing was this tune-up. And for those of you who don't know what we're talking about, of course, you know, the big invitation is get yourself into an experience like that if you can. But the experience of being surrounded by dolphins and having this sound move through you. One thing I need to explain here is we tend to be very horizontal, plane oriented as human beings. Mm-hmm. So you'd look at the other as something that is somehow positioned to you on a horizontal plane. But remember that in the water, there are no such planes and you've got everywhere. And these dolphins are below you, above you, around you, and the music and the sound is moving through you. And if you want to know what a tune-up is, man, I'll tell you.
Well, that's a good way of describing, because I think what's happening, and we're both observing this this phenomenal change in human consciousness now, and you have your perspective and the mythologies that come out of our imagination to describe what this change is, and likely our connections that are so most similar, we're dipping into the same kind of cosmic soup and coming out with these metaphors that describe what that sensation is. But I think what we're witnessing is a huge, huge shift in the mentality of the way we're thinking about all of reality. So in the 20th century, which was part of my study and expertise in the fine arts afforded a window, if you will, or examples of visionary examples of what consciousness looked like as it went through its paces and changes. But in the 20th century, we're seeing new leaps and bounds. And now in the 21st century, we're seeing the end of an era of binary coding, is the way I called it. The symbols that we build our world with are basically binary codes, numbers and letters. And all of our computer codes are based on these 2, 0, 1 or 0x kinds of configurations. And this is what we've been able to reconstruct almost in infinite detail. If you go to movies lately, you can see something that's reconstructed digitally that looks as real as real. So we have this parallel world that now has come to fruition. It is recreating itself in a binary code. This binary code has now reached the end. It's reached the limits of its self-expression, and it's morphing now to another sensibility, what I call the trinary holographic mode, which is very similar to what you describe when you're saying we're adding another section of DNA coding, jumping from 2 to 12. Well, in a way, think about moving from a two-dimensional binary coding system in a 2D sense and expanding out to three dimensions in the hologram of the trinary system. So this is what's occurring to me. And I think that came to me from the dolphins and the whales.
Wow, isn't it exciting? So, okay, so let's talk about your experience as, well, did you actually work with the great John Lilly?
Work with, I knew John at the end of his life. We had kind of an interesting connectivity starting back in the 70s, actually starting earlier for me, but the way our life paths weave sometimes you come close to something or meeting somebody or being with somebody or being on the same page with somebody, and it just doesn't happen that time. It happened in 1977 for me, where I almost went to work with him in Malibu as part of the Janus Project, but life circumstances took me in another direction, and so then I went into the into this gallery situation, developing 20 years worth of that life extension. And then in 1997, I meet John at the International Whale and Dolphin Conference in Australia. I go up to him and I relate a story to him of a woman who was a psychic in Arizona at the time, who told me and he wanted to hook me up with John. And I mention her name, Irma Pound. And he goes, "Oh, Irma Pound, how is she doing?" And we had this beautiful conversation, and I explained the story about Irma telling me and how she felt in the psychic reading that I needed to hook up with John, and that I said, "It took me 20 years, John, but greetings from Irma." And he found that so charming and fun that we became, let's say, friends. And I was able to work with him a couple of times. There was a film crew from Japan that came over, and we met with John towards the latter part of the 90s. And we did some radio interviews. And then this idea of the Cetacean Nation comes from John Lilly. And John [S2] Right. [S1] Is the father of the human dolphin or human cetacean connection. And that's where the whole show unto itself to get into the depth of who John was and what he did. Suffice it to say that he started back as early as the 40s, developed over the years a relationship with cetacean consciousness. That would be the best way I could describe it. He found it through isolation tanks. He found it through experimentation with mind-altering substances, i.e. LSD. He found it through the exposure of being in the water with the dolphins face-to-face and having them download information to his etheric body and then living with that. So these are the kinds of things that he was exposing himself to. He was trying to map out before anybody else even thought about this. And we're all indebted to him for doing this. So that connection continued until his death, just after the beginning of the new millennium.
Yeah, there was some stir about the fact that it was said that he actually gave LSD to the dolphins. Is this true?
I think a lot of those stories get warped intentionally because they wanted to demonize the whole idea of LSD. The worst thing that John did to dolphins was give them anesthesia in hopes of doing some brain probe, because he was a neurophysiologist. He found that in giving them anesthesia, they died instantly, because a dolphin needs to be conscious. In fact, that's the biological imperative of having to breathe each breath. They evolved over millions of years. So if you take in, give a dolphin an anesthetic, they will die. So I think it's interesting to note that level of consciousness is related to breath. And if you think about that in terms of what we've learned about states of consciousness and the yogic traditions, it's all about breath and control of breath. I used to do this exercise with people on the way out on the boat to visit the dolphins, and I would suggest to them that because the dolphins are conscious breathers, it changes the way they think about the world. And I said, here's an example. Hold your breath. And everyone would take a deep breath, and they're holding it. And I'm counting off 1, 2, 3. And after 10 or 15 seconds, people are sort of looking around, and their eyes are circling, and they're going, can I breathe now? I said, well, what happened was that your sense of yourself and the world shifted from an exterior one to an interior one. Because you're thinking about the next breath. You're thinking about connecting to the air. And this is a simple exercise to demonstrate what the dolphins and whales have modified in their own biological makeup over the millions of years.
That's
so they're
incredible.
Conscious. They're conscious with every breath. So that puts them on a different level right away. They're also tantric masters. What that means for anybody who knows the word tantric, you're associating it with some sensual or sexual drives that come from the lower chakras. It is the root and base chakras that that fire the urges, the kundalini coming up, swirling through the other chakra points and coming out the top of the head. Now, there's volumes and volumes written about that. What happens with the dolphins is that they activate these kinds of passageways, starting with the lower chakras, their communication circuitry is very similar to the same thing that would happen if you went into a room and you noticed somebody from across the room you were somehow attracted to in some way or another. And lo and behold, they catch that you're looking at them or catch that you're putting your mind on them. How often has that happened? And how often has it happened to you? You go, whoop, you turn around and somebody's looking at you. What is that? That's a psychosensory pulse that comes from the lower chakras. And this is the way that the cetaceans communicate with humans right now.
I would like to go in another direction here and talk about the idea of Cetacean Nation, which you work with, and the hope that we are actually going to see some governmental, not my favorite word, acceptance of the sovereignty of the cetacean world. And I can't remember which country it was now declaring that. Which one is it?
Helsinki Conference of 2010, they came out of the conference and a number of dignitaries and PhDs did a declaration of rights of the cetaceans. So far, and that's kind of a follow-up to earlier documents that John Lilly himself put together in some of his earlier books, and then a formal document that was done in 1992 and 93 with Roberta Goodman. And this was a document that actually proclaimed what the Cetacean Nation was about and what it could be about, actually getting recognition as a legal standing member of the United Nations. The idea being behind it was that, you know, just having legal standing as an indigenous culture on the planet doesn't ensure any safety by any, you know, especially if you look at the history of what the industrial nations have done to the indigenous cultures. So that's not going to help. You just say, okay, they're indigenous cultures, so what? Let's go out. We can go wipe them out just like we do. They are being wiped out. Wiped out at a current rate of maybe 250,000 dolphins per year, cetaceans that are still dying in tuna nets, they're still suffering from bleeding eardrums from LFAS and seismic testing that are being killed as collateral damage in military exercises, and as we know, being slaughtered in some of the more spectacular shows that demonstrate the bloody waters in Japan or in the Faroe Islands or in the Solomons, which we're all outraged about. But
not to mention those that are engaged in these ridiculous aquatic parks where they might as well be dead because they've been turned into circus animals instead of the immense, beautiful, free spirits that they are.
Well, that's a hot topic because there's a whole avenue of the DAT people who have been working for the last 25 years in dolphin-assisted therapy. And they recognize that the dolphins, although some areas of the scientific community would say that dolphins do no more than dogs when you bring them into a hospital or introducing animals into intensive care or cancer patients, which has been shown to be very beneficial. So they at least admit that it's doing that much. But there's more evidence to indicate that a dolphin's frequencies can actually affect autistic children, can affect people in deep states of depression, can actually do things that will alter the states of consciousness of people who are exposed to them in these enclosed facilities. Not all of them are good. In fact, I would say a majority of them, which are breeding houses that are doing it for the buck, or the ones that are importing dolphins from, let's say, Taji or the Solomons, who are using them as just capital slaves. It is slave trading. So there's got to be a fine line to determine between the two. I think it's important to still retain an opportunity to be with a dolphin in a situation where they're not in the open ocean, but the dolphin itself, let's say, has been rehabilitated and cannot go into the ocean, but he has learned to be an active member of a community of people at a particular dolphinarium. This has been a case of a lot of DAT dolphins. They work with people. So there's that section of people, and then there's the enterprisers, and we want to sort of reduce the enterprisers but still keep that, throw the baby out with the bathwater.
Yeah, and I think, you know, there's no point in pointing finger at any specific abuse, because whether you're sitting there eating popcorn watching a dolphin perform by leaping through a hoop, or whether you're even we that are out on the boats, we're still interfering with their sound. So, you know, I'm not trying to cast aspersions as it is, but there definitely has to be an awareness of how, hold on, let me finish my thought, how human interaction with the cetaceans is crucial to the cetacean population, for starters, and I think crucial to our experience as we started out at the beginning of the interview. Exactly.
And that's the whole point of this. I mean, people say, well, we have evidence that it's good for people, but how is it good for the dolphins and whales?
Exactly. So
why don't we just leave those people alone, as one famous musician once said when asked to do some work with playing music to the dolphins and whales. The point is that at a certain interface, and I believe my experience have shown and proven to me that the dolphins, at least the spinner dolphins here in Hawaii, and the bottlenose dolphins I've had experience with in Florida, and some of the other ones that I've encountered, in spotted dolphins, for example, are very curious, and they have stuff to exchange with humans. And they are very anxious to help us raise our vibrational frequency because they can't communicate with us in the current levels of where we're stuck into our stuff as
right.
a planetary consciousness.
Right.
So the work that you're doing, the work that I'm doing in our own way, the work that James Gilliland is doing, we're all trying to expand out and lighten up this stressful load that's been put on us, programmed into us by the so-called working industrial complex. So, you know, we're on the outside, working on the inside, trying to raise people up. And the people who listen to your show.
You said something that triggered something, and that was you were talking about how the dolphins are helping us. And I just want to recount very quickly, in that time that I leaped in that first story I started out with, something interesting happened in the water. And that was, as I was transitioning out of my fear and getting into the complete bliss of saying, this is where I swim away and leave the planet, a dolphin swam into me and butted me on the arm.
Whoa.
And I thought it was my first thought was, if this is a shark, I'm dead. And you know, the dolphin was
having shoulder going, hello.
No, I'm not a shark. But it was just like, this dolphin has when I later, I mean, obviously the first moment that hit, I wasn't even looking that way because there's so much to take in. So I get this bump and I'm like, if this is a shark, I'm dead. And then this dolphin swam down the length of my body, leaped out of the water, and jumped back in, and leaped back in over me.
Oh.
And people on the boat saw it and said, whoa. They saw the whole thing take place.
That's like a orgasm.
Yeah, it was beyond anything I could ever have dreamed of. And when he jumped back in and splashed in, I just looked and I was like, I'm over the fear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I work with a lot of people who have fears because I learned to swim before I could walk and grew up in the oceans and was a champion swimmer. So water is almost first nature to me. I'm very relaxed. And I usually get on these seminars and workshops, I usually get the person who has had, for some reason or another, a bad relationship with going in the water, particularly the ocean. Sharks are a big one because of all of the drilling from, you know, Steven Spielberg, et cetera. But the miracle that I witness is when people forget their fears entirely after, you know, 5 seconds with, you know, confronting a dolphin swimming by. It's like, what fear? Where was that? I don't remember what that was about.
Yeah, I've had people when I take them in who are just so panicked, so stricken that they're just in complete terror. And I, you know, I tell them, you don't have to do this, you know. No, I want to go. But you don't have to. It's, yeah. You can just enjoy it here. I'm in.
There's a metaphor I often say to people that the water, the ocean itself, is like stepping into spirit. There's a trusting there. And people who struggle to be upright, which they feel is their right, you know, to be in control, are the ones who tire themselves out very quickly in the water and maybe likely would drown. But those who totally let go, totally float free, are bobbing around like a cork, and they are in no danger at all of sinking because the ocean is very buoyant. So like spirit, once you get over the initial trying to control things and just relax, you'll find that you're floating quite nicely. Thank you very much.
Yeah, that is a great word too, control. I mean, there is just, once you realize you cannot control anyone or anything, and you allow yourself to surrender into the experience of all things, that's when life starts to get very interesting.
Right on. Well, the things about the dolphins particularly that I think that most people come away with is that in this environment, in this floating sensation, and you've got a tube that's going out of your mouth, circulating air up to next to your head, it's buzzing with your breath going back and forth, so you're very keenly aware of every breath that you're taking. You're looking through this little window of a mask, and you're floating as these beautiful animals are looking back at you and engaging you in some kind of sensation. And the sensation overwhelms you. It feels familiar, and yet it's the first time you felt it like this. And people finally come to realize and recognize the sensation as what has been known as unconditional love. That those are nice words on a page, but when you feel it resonating through your whole body and every cell are permeated with this wonderful inundated feeling, then the real true I think benefit of being with the whales and dolphins comes to light.
I think you're so eloquently describing the experience that many people don't really understand the depth of it. The idea that you jump into the water and you swim with dolphins and they're beautiful and they make sounds is so superficial to the true experience of this complete, total surrendering to the ultimate spiritual experience. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, you and I are both in beautiful positions to help people have that experience. So not just my own experience, but seeing other people live that is one of the most rewarding things that I am able to do.
Yeah, I think that is the what keeps us doing that. It's certainly not, you know, it's not about money or making any money out of this, because it has nothing to do with it. It's about pure energy of love circulating and on the planet. And you're at a portal place over there. We're at a huge portal place here, 19.5 degrees. The two largest mountains on the planet are reaching up into the sky from the ocean bottom, some 35,000 feet. And they're radiating out on this big island. We have the volcano, which is a total upwelling of energy, 24/7, red, beautiful blood oozing out of the planet, making the newest Earth on Earth. Now, tell me this isn't a radiant beamer right there. So you add to your intention to such a dynamic atmosphere, you add love and beaming this out, it has this great, great ability to reach out to the farthest extremes to contain the planet. And this is where we need to be. We need to have the planetary consciousness ensured in everybody's mind before we're able to step it up to the solar and galactic state of minds.
Which is a beautiful segue into what I want to talk about now, because when I spend a lot of time in Egypt, and I had the honor of working with Hakim, the wonderful, pretty well-known indigenous master teacher.
That's on, before he died, yes.
Uh-huh. And he often talked, we often talked together about how the Giza Plateau was the entry point for the galactic energies, and it came right through and emerged in Kona, hence all this energy, all these
in Kona, it says.
Yeah, so that, you know, that really resonates. And I'd like to talk now about your understanding of the actual ET connection with the cetacean community.
Well, that's a good one, because a lot of people, including John Lilly, going back to the very beginning, felt a very strong connection to the so-called extraterrestrials. In fact, he referred to the cetaceans as extraterrestrials, not being of the planet land or Terra. They are ocean-dwelling. And in fact, that if we were to even have any hopes of understanding another species from another galaxy, perhaps, that have found their way here through some dimensional portal, however they would get across time and space, that we should start in our own backyard to begin to understand and comprehend what it would be like to deal with an extremely intelligent species that's non-human. And this is the big exercise here. How do we let go of our own bias, which is very human? How do we start to unlock all of the chains that we are slaves to, our own descriptions of the world around us that have been given to us and passed down and programmed into us? One by one, we're letting go of these. We're pulling the threads out. We're loosening up these kinds of descriptions so that this new description can come in and overlay itself so that we can start to move on. Otherwise, we're going to choke ourselves to death. And this is where we are. We're at a critical stage. Human development only works best when its back is against the wall and there's a critical 11th hour decision to be made. Then we move forward with it. And this is where we are now. This is what's going on when this new thing is developing out of that critical awareness.
You're such a kindred spirit. I hear the words coming out of your mouth and I'm saying, God, these are the same words I choose.
We're hearing the same sources, Patricia.
That's so true. Yes,
I'm reaching up into the noosphere or to the Akashic record or to the cetacean frequency radio band or whatever you want to call it. And we're coming back with the same kind of translations because of our mutual experience. Often I've paired going into a museum of fine art, like the Museum of Modern Art in New York is a good example, to the average person on the street. They go into that museum and they're very intimidated because they don't know what the hell they're looking at. And it's all strange and they think it should be important because somebody told them it should be important and some curator and historian put it in there, so it must have something. Why am I not getting it? Now, for 20 years, this was my job, was to take people who were ready to start to look at something from beyond their prejudices, beyond what they thought that they were given as an awareness. The dolphins told me that that's my job with them, to use art as a metaphor to help people to come to terms with this non-objective reality, with this abstract concept, which is the cetacean consciousness.
And as we were speaking earlier about the microcosm and the macrocosm, it stands to reason in reference to my allusion to the galactic or extraterrestrial dolphins and whales that, you know, as above, so below, as below, so above, baby. So it stands to reason that we are, the cetaceans are not only Earth beings, but that the universe is the cosmos, the cosmic sea, is also being held together by the song of these great beings. I believe that in every cell of my body.
Mm. I think they support, let's call a radio band frequency, that is cetacea for planet Earth. And that radio band also supports communication frequencies from other star systems because they recognize themselves as being of a star system. And so that's where these things are coming in. So you're getting Sirius or Pleiadian energies or, you know, a number of other descriptions of things that people sense. And certainly the Egyptians felt very strongly connected to Orion and the Sirian galaxy, Sirian configurations in the sky. So we know that there's something coming through. We've lost that ability. It's been actually engineered out of us, as you well know, you know, with some of the manipulation, which we don't really quite know because her memories were wiped clean. I'm sorry. We can only put together pieces and all of the new dramas of awakening and putting it back together. And they're all demonstrations of what's happening inside of all of us. And I think it's exciting. I'm so happy that I decided to incarnate now and look around and go, oh my God, this is really cool. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, me too. I especially here where I'm in the Azores, it is, as I said earlier, it's for me and for many other people too. You mm-hmm. step onto the earth here out of your airplane and go, okay, mm-hmm. this is Atlantis. This is going to be fun. Because
I heard Lemurian chants over here. So, you know, I've got Lemuria, you've got Atlantis, we've got this island kind of connection to the noosphere, which is great.
But, you know, I really do believe or remember that we did actually swim. We actually did live with whales and dolphins and spend much more time in the ocean in mm-hmm. those time frames. So it's very exciting.
What if all that is in the dream space? You see, that's been called to question. I mean, we're starting to understand now states of lucid dreaming, for example, that we can tap into a part of our subconscious, which is going on all the time. It's you know, our conscious mind is only constitutes a tiny fragment of all that's happening in our aware, in our sphere of being. But in the dream time, where a lot of the whales and dolphins are very familiar, this is where people start to come back with these intuitions or they come back with these feelings. So it is dream time information that also accesses the star, you know, the star clusters and the star information that's coming through on those band frequencies. The dolphins and whales are holding that space so that the band frequency is even available to be broadcast.
Indeed. So, and those of you who also are finding yourselves often dreaming of dolphins and whales, be excited to know that you really have plugged in. And even if you're not out there swimming like we are, you're still plugged in, because it is all fluid. It is the cosmic sea, and it is all one consciousness.
Yeah. And, you know, your visions are very similar to mine. A lot of the mythologies that are starting to be developed out of these things are connections with different star clusters. That's all part of the inside story, which is being told outwardly. And this is where we're going. We're trying to bring the in out. We've had enough of the out in.
Yeah. Douglas, what are you doing now? Are you bringing...
Watching a golden sun as it touches the tip of the beautiful Pacific Ocean.
No, that's not what I mean, but thank you for sharing that. What I mean is, for people who are interested in knowing more about swimming out with you, do you have a website? Do you have a way that people can contact you?
Thank you for that. Yes, I have actually several different interfaces on the web. I've lately been trying to raise consciousness, start to blow the whistle, or no, that's the wrong phrase. Let's say ring the bell for the Cetacean Nation on the Facebook page called Cetacean Nation. There's a website called cetaceannation.com that'll lead you to some of the information flows. There's a YouTube channel now called Cetacean Nation. So on the Cetacean Nation front, I have that coming through. About a dozen years ago, I developed the Cetacean Nation website along with a website called Dolphinville, as in Margaritaville, but dolphinville.com, which was meant to sort of incorporate the local, flotsam and jetsam here and connect people globally to the idea of Kona dolphins. There's also the Dolphin Matrix, which I had hoped that would be able to connect up to different places all over the planet, all different people, different artists, different sensibilities as a means also. So Dolphin Matrix, Dolphin, the Cetacean Nation, and dolphinville.com, along with the Cetacean Nation Facebook, are ways to get in touch with that. Now, you can read the information on there. If you're coming to Kona, absolutely get in touch and look into some of the workshops that are being done here. I've been working with Joan Ocean at Joan Ocean International Dolphin Connection for, since the late 90s. She's the best person I know and probably chiefly responsible for carrying this whole idea of the dolphins sharing with humans. She knew John Lilly and worked with him, and has been a real proponent since the 80s, living here in Hawaii since the late 1989. So she's chiefly responsible for bringing me over here originally. I came to one of her seminars. It totally, took me into another way of thinking about myself. I went back. My old life didn't make sense anymore. And it was not directly due to Joan. The dolphins had something to do with it too, and Kona and all of that, but she was definitely a catalyst, and that's been her role. And I'm pleased to work with her and other groups internationally that come here and want to connect up.
Wonderful. Well, we're almost out of time. I would like to say that leave this thought. I'd like to see more whale and dolphin organizations work together, because many times we're fragmented, working in our own directions and forgetting that we have to unite our forces to join forces. So perhaps that's down the road for us. My organization, which has been founded last year, is Save Earth's Oceans, Inc. Mm-hmm. And we are new, so we are only at the beginning of what we hope to accomplish. But you can find out more about Save Earth's Oceans at saveearthsoceans.org. I have an event coming up in London, April 25th, where the Royal Philharmonic Orchestra will back 8 or 10 performers. All of them will be using dolphin or whale music in each piece of music that they do, and it's about singing the oceans alive. So I have that to look forward to, so please check that out. And
events, there is an event here in Kona next year in March 1st through the 5th called the Cetacean Summit. And there is a select group of people who've been working with dolphins and representing the Cetacean Nation who will be presenters, Joan Ocean including in that. And I would encourage people to check out Cetacean Summit 2014 on there is a website and also on Facebook. So that'll give you
I can't be there for that, unfortunately, because I'll be immersed in what I'm doing in London, but that's going to be an exciting event too. There is a lot going on, people, so tune in and reach out, please, to do what you can to experience the magnificence of this. And by the way, I'm excited to say that my novel is coming out, The Emissary, which is also about the music of the whales and the peril of losing that music. That's coming out in March. So, boy, oh, boy, here we are. We are in the frequency, swimming into the infinite possibilities of the human cetacean connection. Thank you, Douglas. It's been a fabulous, wonderful hour with you. It's gone already. Whew!
There was a green flash as you were just saying that, so that's a great way to finish the program. Thanks so much for having me on, and aloha to everybody in Radio Land.
Aloha to you, and as you're enjoying the sunset, I am about to get the sunrise here. And with that, I would like to thank you all for tuning in wherever you are on the globe. Please spread the word beyond the matrix for those who think outside the box of convention. This is an hour to soar with the eagles in the free thought zone. This is Patricia Corey thanking you for listening in and signing out. Nanu, nanu. I'm out of here.